Discuss, challenge, inform, comment, viewpoint on Talk Radio Europe.
Giles Brown.
Live comment and discussion with studio guests. Viewpoint.
You're listening to Viewpoint. It is the 23rd, Tuesday the 23rd of May. Viewpoint is Talk Radio Europe's current affairs discussion programme with a panel of invited guests. Joining me today are former ABC correspondent Nathan Thomas. Good morning, Nathan.
Good morning, Giles.
And Alf Brewer, active Labour Party member and a frequent member of this panel. Good morning to you, Alf.
Hi, Giles.
And we're going to be joined a little bit later by Rosalind Scott-Gibb, who has been delayed, but she'll be with us around 10:30. If you want to get involved in today's show, 952-78-4000 is the phone number. Studio at talkradioeurope.com is the email. The Facebook page is Talk Radio Europe Official if you want to leave a post. And, of course, you can get us on Twitter as well at TRE Talk is good. Only one thing is making the front pages and the headlines today in the UK. Most of us woke up this morning to the terrible news of the attacks at a pop concert in Manchester. At the moment, we are hearing reports of 22 dead at the concert. Little we can do about it. It's one of these things. We have been on a high state of terror before. We have been here before. It is perhaps the softest of soft targets. Children, mothers and fathers at Ariana Grande, who is a pop star. She's not a rock star. It's not an old audience. And this makes even more the attack more terrible, more depressing. Nathan, you know, we have been here before. Your thoughts, please.
Well, we have. It's the nightmare that anybody dealing with security worries about. I mean, because there is no way to stop, you know, a determined person, and as much security as you put up, there are people who are trying to find ways around it, through it, under it, over it, whatever, trying to foil your security plans, and every so often they do. I mean, we've seen it happen with all of a sudden vehicles being turned into weapons. That was something that nobody had really thought of before. So somebody started doing that, and now you're seeing bollards on roads and all sorts of things to deter that from happening again. This attack, from what we seem to understand now, and of course it is still really early in this, and some of what we think we know now, we may find out later, was not quite correct. But most of the time you think of a bomb going off at the event in the hall or in the arena where it's going on. And apparently this one was in the lobby of the building and after the event, when, if you think about it, security is probably a lot less. I don't know what their security setup was, but when you were going into the concert, I'm sure everyone was checked, but probably as they went into the arena. I don't know whether the lobby was a security zone, or certainly not as secure as inside, and especially a concert like this, where you said young people are a lot of young people. Parents are going to be coming to pick them up, and it's, I'll meet you in the lobby afterwards, so you don't have to come out and wander around and try to find the car. So toward the end of the concert, you have a lot of people coming to the venue, and I don't know whether, you know, anybody thinks of trying to secure those people coming into the lobby to wait for their children. That's what you think about. And of course, when you realize the possibilities, and someone did, it was probably perfectly easy for the bomber to walk in without too much trouble at that point to do what he did this time. Now, what this is going to do to future events, we have to wait and see.
Let's just see what we'll recap what we have at the moment. 22 people, including children, have been killed and 59 injured in a suicide attack. It's been called a suicide attack in the Manchester Arena. Happened at just gone 10:30 UK time, 11:30 our time, on Monday at the end of the concert by Ariana Grande. Police said the lone male attacker who died in the blast detonated an improvised explosive device. There was a police conference this morning, which I caught. Relatives are using social media to hunt for missing loved ones and 60 ambulances attended the incident, and those wounded are now being treated. Chief Constable Ian Hopkins in the press conference this morning said it was the most horrific incident Greater Manchester had ever faced. He said the fast-moving investigation, his words, was now working to establish whether the attacker was acting alone or part of a network. Eyewitnessing described seeing metal nuts and bolts amongst the debris and spoke about the fear and confusion that gripped those. Now, when you're talking about metal being involved in a shrapnel, any explosion will do that. It doesn't have to be, it was a nail bomb, as I've seen certain people have been claiming on social media this morning.
Well, I don't think they know yet. I mean, as they examine it, I mean, obviously, if as they start going through the debris, you find, you know, a large number of nails, bolts, nuts, whatever. But again, a lot of bombs that are built to, you know, to kill and maim people. I mean, that's one of the things you do. You put a lot of shrapnel right in the bomb and let it blow out. So again, this will all become clear eventually, or more clear. Whether how much we will know for sure remains to be seen. But it's still so early that a lot of speculation is going on as to who did it, why they did it, how they did it, all of this. And some of the speculation will prove to be right, probably, and some of it wrong.
952-78-4000. We're live here at TRE Talk Radio Europe, your voice in Spain. Like to hear your reactions to this morning's shocking news. 952-78-4000. studio@talkradioeurope.com is the email, and the Facebook page, Talk Radio Europe Official. As I said before, the explosion seems to have happened in the foyer of the arena. The Prime Minister is chairing a meeting of the government's emergency COBRA. It started at 10 o'clock about 11 minutes ago. 11 minutes past 10 is the time here. She is chairing a meeting of COBRA. Home Secretary Amber Rudd said it was a barbaric attack, deliberately targeting some of the most vulnerable. London Mayor Sadiq Khan says the police presence in the capital would be stepped up. The UK is currently at severe, is the status in terms of a terrorist attack after last night's events. I mean, what can we say? Any event, it seems that anything, we've had attacks last year. We think of Paris and the Bataclan attack, of course. We think of, you know, the attacks that have taken place targeting sports stadiums. Alf, you said coming on air, you know, I mean, it's Manchester. There are several well-known venues there. This place, the Manchester Arena, is in the heart of Manchester's busiest district. The train station, of course, is right there. And you said if people wanted to attack a large number of people, there are events going on every week in Manchester.
Yeah, there's two stadiums, Manchester United, Manchester City. It means each week there's between 50 and 70,000 people in one venue every single week throughout the football season. The MNE has lots and lots of things going on. In my time, I've been a steward at MNE at Labour Party Conference, at TUC.
Is that the Manchester MNE being the Manchester?
That's the arena.
Right.
So yeah, got you.
Manchester Arena, and next door to it is the mainline train station. There's a whole pile of things. It's like a mini island. It's to the north of Manchester, by the way. It's not in the centre, and it's not really near. You can walk to the town centre in about 10 or 15 minutes, but it is a place that people go to for lots and lots of reasons. You know, there's lots of places to go for youngsters, etc., etc. But some of the things, like this, everybody blows up COBRA. You would expect them to hold a meeting of COBRA if for no other reason than to put the right resources that Manchester will need to overcome this. And we all talk in terms of, you know, people, 22 dead, 59 injured, that's bad. There would have been probably another 200 people who would have been affected, but you know, in the immediate area, because you can hear them. They're doing interviews now with people who aren't injured, or they got, you know, slight injuries, who don't become part of that population, and everybody who's involved in this will affect thousands of people, and it's not just the centre of Manchester. There was a lot of people, for example, whether they were all leaving to catch a train to Bury at the same time, I don't know, but there seems to be a lot of people from the Bury area. But it will be all of those outlying places. So there'll be you know, you cannot, you know, untold numbers of people and the trauma that they would have gone through. So there will have to be massive, massive amounts of resources put up there into the NHS, into the mental health organisations there, because there will be people who will be, you know, dramatically traumatised by this. It will have to get on. I mean, the classic stuff, though, the good stuff, which is very British, is the number of people that have been reported as putting messages out to say, we know you can't get home, come round my house, you can have a cup of tea, sit down, getting emotional now. Yeah, but that's brilliant.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, hotels have been giving that free rooms, haven't they, last
absolutely
night?
Absolutely, you know, and they couldn't, nobody could move, because, you know, the train station was closed, the tram line was closed, presumably most of the taxis were cleared out. You know, the only transport were police cars and ambulances, or you walked. So, you know, I think for all of those organisations to do it, you know, it's just a sign of the British nature of things. And the sooner we get back to behaving normal, you know, I was around when the London bombings went off, and I live on the edge of London, but by, you cannot, the untold, my mum rang me from Chippenham in Wiltshire to make sure I was all right. And I live, you know, 15 miles outside the centre of London. But it's surprising how people do it, you know, and then lock up the phone lines.
Yeah, all right. Let's have a look at the international reaction to the suicide bombing, swift international reaction. Russian President Vladimir Putin has condemned the blast as a cynical, inhuman crime, whilst German Chancellor Angela Merkel called the attack incomprehensible. French President Emmanuel Macron said his country is at Britain's side in mourning, and Australian Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull called it an attack on innocence. Meanwhile, US First Lady Melania Trump has tweeted her thoughts and prayer to the affected family. Just been watching a press conference with President Trump, who has described the suicide bomber as an evil loser. Trump, of course, in Bethlehem today. He was only talking a part of his tour over to his trip over on his first foreign trip, which we'll come on to a bit later, about this, the fighting evil and terrorism. And this is exactly the sort of thing that people will say he was right about. Panel.
Well, it's not about whether he was right, because you can't be wrong about this. You know, terror and evil is there, and you should try to combat it. But what is always pertinent with this is you hear all the world leaders joining in, you know, condemning what's gone on, etc., etc., and you have to then say, okay, so what are you going to do about it? Because that's where Trump has been right. Not enough countries are putting enough resources in order to do this stuff. And Daesh or ISIS or whatever they want to call themselves, I don't really care, a bunch of terrorists who are being squashed out in the place where they thought they were going to make their home are now doing exactly what the security people said they would do. They're spreading it to, you know, these odd single... You cannot stop an individual person in the mine. You can't stop them from you know, these attacks. It's just almost impossible. What you don't hear about is that, all right, this one person's got through and this one person's done something. And actually, he hasn't got through anything, because they're still saying he was outside the arena. He's just perhaps too close. And a lot of the shrapnel and whatever, they reckon, came from the security doors. And now they're going to start investigating the type of glass and the type of metal, et cetera, et cetera. But that's, you know, that's all after the event. But these people are now sophisticated, and this isn't the first time. The Nice bombing, which, if you recall, was on the beach when they did their fireworks display.
Well, the truck, you mean? That was a truck?
No. It was, they were on the beach, and there was a fireworks display like they have in Spain. And at the end of the process, it was the truck was in there and all the rest of it, but it was at the end of the night.
Yeah.
The event had finished. People were coming away from the event, and that's when they struck. And that's exactly what they've done here. It's at the end of the event. People are coming out of the event. So the guy doesn't have to break through to any security barriers or anything. He just has to put himself in a position. And I know they're saying it's a suicide bomber, but you don't really know. You know, these are unsophisticated bombs. The guy could have set it off in the hope that he was going to run away and do whatever and not get caught up in it. But, you know, triggered, gone off, he's dead. You know, now the hope is that they can find enough you know, without being too morbid, enough bits of this guy that they can actually identify who he is. And then, because he isn't the problem now, because he's dead.
Mm.
But he probably hasn't done this on his own. There will be a network of people. If it is a proper terrorist attack, there will be a network of people. And today, not only is it, you know, London on high alert, they closed Victoria bus station. Victoria train station is about 200 yards away, if you know London. Yeah. So there will... And what that then does is heightens everybody's thing. So Sadiq Khan saying, oh, we'll put more police on the streets in London, fine. But it's about being strategic about it. Where are you putting them? Why are you putting them there? Mainly, it's for people's own personal view of safety.
Yeah.
If they see a policeman with a machine gun, they feel much safer than not seeing a policeman. So it's quite right that you put all your police service out and all your... And just get them there, just to calm everybody down and say, look, we think we're on top of this. We think we've got the track. We think we know where it's come from. And more importantly, somebody said on the radio today on one of the BBC things, the most important person, if there is one, is the bomb maker. Because the bomb maker is crucial to knowing where to get all the stuff to put the bombs together, how to do it, and giving them. And the second thing is that, you know, the obvious thing is these guys or these people that are doing it, they're obviously trained. You don't just make a bomb and walk up to somewhere and go bang. It don't work like that. You've got to be much more sophisticated. And that's this thing about ISIS moving it away from their safety, comfort home all over Europe. Europe's going to be, you know, massive now.
Getting breaking news here that the police, Ian Hopkins, who's the chief constable of Manchester, said it was a lone male who died, attacker died detonating the device. Going to go to the social media after this.
Viewpoint with Giles Brown.
You're listening to Viewpoint with me, but Giles Brown, joined in the studio by Nathan Thomas and Alf Brewer. 952-78-4000 is the phone number if you wish to voice your opinion on the attacks in Manchester overnight or in any opinion. And studio at talkradioeurope.com, the email, the Facebook page, Talk Radio Europe Official, Twitter at TRE Talk is good. People have been using social media to try and contact loved ones who haven't been in touch since the suicide attack. Parents and friends have been posting messages with photos of those still missing as they try to track them down. They've been using the hashtag missing in Manchester. Locals also tweeted offers of accommodation, as Alf was saying earlier, for those caught up in the chaos and who needed a bed for the night. Going to our media, Talk Radio Europe official Louise has said, such a tragic waste of life. Catherine says, we must all count our blessings. Julius says Manchester Police Emergency Hotline for anyone missing relatives is, and this is only for people missing relatives, 441618569400. Only missing relatives, 00. It'll be 441618569400. George, tweet or send a message from Bangkok saying yes, and two in Bangkok same day makes you think. Cherie, tragic. David, we were just planning a trip to Manchester for this weekend. It's mad. Vanda, horrible and sad. And Vanessa in Manchester, the amount of times I've been there, and with my kids too. And Tate, her child, has been there with his mates. It's just unbelievable and heartbreaking. 952-78-4000 is the phone number. Studio at talkradioeurope.com is the email if you want to get involved. Again, though, we're seeing, once again, it's an attack on, if you like, the way of life. You know, life goes on. I mean, you've seen bombings all over the world, Nathan, and you know that the thing that people do is, and as we were saying earlier, is they club together and they get together and they carry on.
Indeed, and the idea is that, you know, if you don't, then the terrorists win, and you're succumbing to that. And tragic as it is, and horrible as it is, of course, more directly for the people, you know, directly involved in it, you know, everybody else kind of needs to pick up and keep going, or the terrorists just win more and more and more and get what they want, and whatever that may be. But basically, it's to have people living in fear in whatever system they're in, and to change the system into something else by destroying people's morale, basically. And most places, people do realize this and say, yes, it was horrible, but we do have to go on.
And we've got a caller on the line. Good morning, caller. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Good morning, Giles. It's Jason. I wasn't going to call in today, but I felt so appalled by what had happened. I felt implored to. Listen, I love this programme because it sort of champions democracy and freedom of speech, which is the very thing that's under attack. As regards to Donald Trump's words, they seem really poignant this morning, the fight between good and evil. These evil people probably enjoying all the publicity, but they won't enjoy what I'm about to say, because I think these people are dirty, abhorrent, repugnant and vociferous, a vile enemy, Daesh, a pestilent stain upon humanity and a betrayal of every good Muslim in the faith and their God Muhammad. The civilised world should unite behind Donald Trump instead of trying to pull him down to rid this world of this malignant cancer. Now, Nathan, what is it about America that everybody's trying to pull him down when the man is trying to take the fight to these people? Because the only thing that's stopping these people killing millions, and not everyone, is they just do not have the capability yet, but they will. So there's a race against time. Nathan, what do you think about that?
Well, I think you're true, and what you're saying is correct. But you know, the question is, what do you do? I mean, Donald Trump certainly isn't the only person in various ways trying to stop terrorism. Part of the problem, of course, is some people don't disagree with what they're doing, and you try to pressure. And again, some of these are some of these countries that have at least tacitly supported what others call terrorists. Yes, Donald Trump has spoken out strongly against them. I mean, what he said at that large conference over the weekend in Saudi, I mean, I think he said it very well. The question is, what effect will it have? I mean, he basically challenged Muslim nations to take control or more control of the situation. Whether or not they will do that remains to be seen. But yes, I think as far as that is concerned, he's doing fine. But, you know, that's one area. There are other areas where people disagree Iran. What he's doing.
Iran. What about Iran? Do you think Iran should be brought on board as he's trying to bring Russia on board? Because that's a big player in the region, Iran. Yeah. You know, rather than isolating them, maybe Iran should come on this coalition as well.
Well, that is one way to look at it. But if you listen to Donald Trump, when he spoke in Saudi, Iran was the great enemy. So
that's a mistake.
Well, all right. Yeah. Again, it is all how different people see it and what you try, you know.
But your question was, why do we denigrate what Trump's trying to do? And it's because his hands are tied. You know, I'm not sure if everybody really understands, but, you know, if Trump and America decide we're going to go into Syria and we're going to do this, that and the other, that they're going to be the only players on the scene. Well, they're not. NATO, for one, will get involved in it because they have to, even though it's mainly US. The European Union will have something to say in it. Putin will have something to say about it. So Trump can't just wander around the world like maybe the Americans used to be able to. Certainly the British did. You know, deciding we're going to put this war down or we're going to do this or we're going to do without worldwide implications. I just said earlier, if you're going to beat ISIS and Daesh and all that, it's no use. You know, with the best will in the world, I don't know what they do, so I'm not having a go at them. But I don't know what effort Canada put in. I don't know what effort Australia put in. I don't know what effort. You know, I know that ex-Commonwealth countries tend to have troops on the ground wherever Britain is doing its thing. Tend to have, yeah. And America.
Yeah, can I just say what?
Go ahead.
I agree with what you said there, I do. Giles, can I just say that if ever there was a poignant time, there's never a right time for Donald Trump to come to Britain to stand shoulder to shoulder with our country, our main allies now. And if any politicians are listening, maybe that would be a really good... He's in Air Force One, maybe he should jump in the plane and make an unscheduled stop and come to Britain.
What about still come to Europe? It's not about Britain. It's about Europe. It's about pulling the whole of Europe together as one organisation to say, and we're going to do more. Just remember, part of the comment and the criticism, never mind about the election stuff, part of the comment and criticism is there are a number of European countries who do not spend, you know, anywhere near 2% of their GDP on a system with NATO. Trump made that quite clear, and he's saying that's not good enough. And for the rest of us now, this is what you're saying, now is the time for the rest of us to put pressure on these
Absolutely.
Countries to say, now put your penny in, Now put your whatever you put in, whatever you do, so that we can have a united campaign and make it worldwide, because that's the one thing that Putin can't walk away from.
Jason, thanks very much for your call in. 952-784-4000 is the phone number. studio@talkradioeurope.com is the email, and the Facebook page, if you want to get involved and leave a post there, is Talk Radio Europe Official. Richard has said, sadly, this will kind of benefit May in the general election, no? By the time this news fizzles out, we'll be less than a fortnight from the general election. Perfect timing for her to bury, quote, bad news like the social care cap. And saying you can't be wrong about terror and evil, so somebody else, yeah, try telling ISIS that. 952-784-4000. Obviously, the news today is dominated by the explosions last night in Manchester. The government and all parties have agreed to suspend election campaign, electioneering today. But the election goes on, as the last caller or the last emailer said, Richard. Less than 2 weeks to the general election. There was being tough on terror. It's been an interesting week for both parties. Alf, I think we'll move away from Manchester at the moment. Obviously, we'll come back to it if any more news comes out. But Alf,
before moving away, just let's go back. This domestic stuff that people complain about, like last night, people couldn't use their mobile phones, so we were having difficulty getting networks and all that. And you go, when the Zeebrugge car ferry went under, British Telecom were given lots of money by the government to set up a thing called the BT Network Management Centre, which means never again will people get loads of engaged tones. Unfortunately, mobiles work on masts. The local masts would have been full. Mm. People wouldn't have been able to use their phones. So it's not about blaming the... And there is no way to change that. It's called modern technology with mobiles.
We've got callers on the line. I was talking about. Good morning, caller. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Hello, my name's Royston. I'm here from Fuengirola.
Royston, yes, good morning.
Yes, good morning. No, the only thing I've had, nobody's ever mentioned this and that, because I'm pretty certain that these suicide bombers could be programmed by hypnotists. You see what hypnotists can do on the television. Don't you think they're capable of programming these suicide bombers?
Indoctrinated, maybe. Hypnotism, possibly, Royston. Thank you for your call in on that one, though. Thank you very much. We've got another caller on line two. Good morning, caller. You're live on TRE.
Morning, Giles. Morning, Pat. Morning, panel.
Morning, Gray.
It's great. How are you?
This morning has been an interesting morning, Gray. Your take on it, please.
Yeah. Well, I've just come back from Rome, and I heard Alf say earlier, and he's quite right, that we need to... Well, he said, an option would be to put the police and the military on the streets. In Rome, in every train station, in every monument, there are soldiers, armed soldiers, and it makes you feel a lot better. And I know kind of almost you're baying to them, that's what they want. But I think in the short term, I think we've got a lot of soldiers sat in barracks, kind of sat on their hands, that really should be deployed to the streets just to try and calm it and bring a sense of security to us. And the other thing is, like everybody, let's absolutely deplore the individual act, and let's not tar everybody with the same brush. And the last comment would be, I just hope that nobody tries to make any kind of political point by this, because that would be a disgrace.
Indeed. Great. Thanks for your call in there. Good to hear from you, as always.
Well, one of the things about... Britain's always been against putting the army on the streets unless there's a real reason. So, if the unions go on strike, we put the army on and they drive the fuel tankers and all that sort of stuff. But in real terms, we keep the army out of it. And no disrespect to the United States, but when you get so many people... army people are trained to kill. That's what they do. That's their job, and they do it on our behalf. Police are not trained to kill. They're trained to deter, which is a completely different setup. And I occasionally go back to the UK, and every time I go back, I'm more and more amazed at how many armed police that you now see. They're not all walking around with submachine guns. Many of them have got weapons, but that's because I'm moving around the sort of places where tourists would go, so mainline stations, airports, places like that. There are a lot more. And all I keep saying is, you could have, in Heathrow Airport, they could have 200 armed coppers. It still wouldn't stop one bloke walking in with a haversack, going bang. Wouldn't stop it. What it does, though, is it makes the general public feel safer. That's really important. And secondly, if there are more than one person involved in an attack, they can sort of control it and control it better.
Nathan.
Well, it is also a matter of whatever country, whatever government you're talking about, they want to be seen to be doing something to combat the problem. In a situation like this, nobody knows what to do right now. But one thing you do, you flood the streets with police or something. People say, oh, they're doing something. And this is not a criticism. It's just a reality. The government wants to do something. But at this point, nobody knows what to do. I mean, until the investigation goes a little further and they get more information, then fine, they can maybe do something. But the first reaction, of course, is to make people feel safer. The one way you do that is put visible security out, and that's a satisfying thing. So governments do that, knowing it, as Alf said, you're not going to stop a one-off person popping up and doing something like this. But again, you want to keep the population calm, feeling relatively secure, so they do what they can, and this is about what you can do at this point.
And I think as well, sometimes these ain't things you brag about, but when you're involved and you've been involved with these things, you have a different perspective on it. Like I've always said to people, I come from East London. I lived in East London. Anybody who lived anywhere near or in East London over a period of time, my house rocked from 4 bombings in London. It didn't make us feel any less safe. It didn't make us feel any more safe. It was good to know that, you know, when a bomb went off, there would be 1,000 police would descend on the place for maybe a week, and then they'd all go. You know, when a Canary Wharf bomb went off, my whole roof of my house shook, and I lived, you know, about a mile and a half, 2 miles from Canary Wharf, so it's never going to affect me directly. But it was just so good to know that it wasn't going to carry on. It wasn't going to carry on. I actually drove through the bomb that blew up in Bishopsgate, and I was past the police cordon, driving into the London Labour Party office, seeing all the paper coming down. I think it was like a ticker tape display, and you go, oh, I wonder what all that was. What it does do, it makes you more aware of what's going on. But it, like I say, it never ever felt me make. Made me feel any more safer or any less safer. It's just an expectation of life that you deal with.
I think one of the things, though, is this is a pop concert. This is a concert where you've got family. I've worked in concert promotions, and I remember that I've done several. I've done everything from Deep Purple to a band like this, like we did the Sugar Babes a while back, and it's going to be mums and dads and kids going to their first concert, the second concert, all groups of friends, all excited. You know, no political agenda whatsoever. I mean, you can't get much more, you know, short of doing something at a pantomime. There's no political agenda here, and that's what makes this whole thing sickening. We're joined in the studio by Roslyn Scott-Gibb.
Morning.
Good morning, Roslyn. Just want to get your take on the events overnight, the bombing.
I know. I mean, it's yet another tragedy. The only and what is very, very sad is that there's no barriers. There's no, you know, like they're not going to avoid children or people in hospital. In fact, the barriers have gone down, haven't they? Anything can happen.
You mean in terms of what's a legitimate target rather than physical barriers, right? Yeah,
young people and things like that. But I'm, you know, trying to be positive, trying to pull something positive out of this is that at least Britain, Europe, is becoming more and more aware and able to handle these. I mean, we don't know how many attempts have been stopped. I'm just trying to be positive, because otherwise, you know, we're going to be victims, and we can't. There's no point going into that mode.
That's what I was trying to say earlier, Giles. I think I missed the point, though. It's called, you know, one guy does a bombing. How many hundreds of people have been looked at by the police? How many people have been deterred from doing it? There will be. I'll guarantee over the next month there will be some more arrests on terrorist activity. For whatever reason, obviously, what we don't want to do is even though we want it to happen, we're still British. If someone is accused of doing something, we want to see the evidence. There's no Guantanamo Bays anymore, it's called. If you lock somebody up, if you put them into a prison because you think they're a terror threat, then you have to give the information to prove that they're a terror threat and get them into the system so that they're dealt with properly. What we don't want to do is just see the police given a, which is unfortunate, given an open hand, oh, just lock up who you think is nasty and naughty. Otherwise, most of the villains in East London would have been locked up for a long, long time without, you know, ever appearing in court. I just think you have to temper everything with, we want to see control, but not over-the-top control. And whatever they do with whoever it is they find, they have to justify it.
I do hope that Brexit doesn't mean that British security will not be as closely involved with the rest of Europe as it has been.
Well, I mean, that was one of the things that Theresa May was saying. We're going to go away, I think, from this for a minute at a time, coming up to 15 minutes at the top of the hour. This is just going to come down the wires from our media partners at IRN, the suicide bombing. Just a quick recap. Following a concert at Manchester, the arena has killed 22 people and left 59 injured. Children are among the dead. Let's look back at how events unfolded. This quick report from IRN.
A gentleman said, run! Somebody said, a bomb, a bomb. So then I just literally grabbed my daughter and we just ran. Really, I've never been so scared in my whole life.
This has been the most horrific incident we have ever faced here in Greater Manchester. We believe the attacker was carrying an improvised explosive device, which he detonated.
Everybody was screaming and crying.
This was an evil act.
The police and the ambulance, the riot police, were in there before we were even out. Before we were even out, I don't know how they managed to do that. They were so quick.
Viewpoint with Giles Brown.
You're listening to me, Giles Brown, on TRE Talk Radio Europe, your voice in Spain. This is Viewpoint, Talk Radio Europe's current affairs programme with a panel discussing the issues of the day. 952-784-4000. Studio at talkradioeurope.com is the live email, the Facebook page, Talk Radio Europe Official, joined in the studio by Rosalind Scott-Gibb, Alf Brewer and Nathan Thomas. Let's move away from the events in Manchester last night. Today's campaigning for the election has been suspended, but the election still carries on. The Prime Minister currently chairing a Cobra meeting. Alf, we are still in the midst of... it's been an interesting week for all parties in the run-up to the general election. Your take, please.
Yeah, let's just start from my take on the beginning, and this is my take.
Yep.
This is the most un-election, general election, that I've ever been nearly involved in. They're just... The amount of enthusiasm, the amount of people involved, the level of conversation, the arguments that have gone on is quite low. You know, everybody is talking about the leaders because this isn't a general election, I don't think, about the parties. This is a general election about the leaders. I said before, and I still mean it, Nicola Sturgeon's got... You know, much to do if she's going to ever carry on saying second referendum. They're a one-trick pony. They've got nothing else to argue for. The UKIP people, you know, will be squashed. They will be squashed even more now. They'll be squashed by the Tories, both on security and on the issue of Brexit, because they've delivered their bit. They delivered the vote to leave Europe. Now they've got to be, you know, people are going to say, give it to the person who's going to negotiate it. The Labour Party's never going to do it. Or we don't believe the Labour Party's going to do it. Therefore, you know, Theresa May is the person that we trust. So... UKIP have got a major problem. The Lib Dems, as much as they're trying, they're in a very narrow thing. Their manifesto is all about, and it's the first time I've ever seen that, we're not talking about winning, we're talking about being the party of opposition. It's like, well, you are a party of opposition, you're not very good at it. And when you was given a platform to be the real party of opposition inside the government, when you were part of the coalition, you failed miserably to be the party of opposition. So why would people ever trust you again? It then becomes a question of between May and Corbyn. And that's what it is. It's not about the issues. It's not about the policies, or very little of it. And you go, oh, yeah, she's made a big error because they've got this cap on Yeah, the problem for all of the political parties on dealing with a growing old population is the same. Nobody's got a solution. Well, there is a solution. It's called everybody's got to pay more money, or more money's got to be found from somewhere. You can't keep nicking it off the NHS. You can't keep nicking it off your social services. You can't keep nicking it off of councils. You know, they're at the bottom end. So it's crunch time. I would have thought the Tories, you know, for once would have said, we're going to attack taxes for this. To say that you're going to... we're going to give more money for this and we're going to take it from here. And what they've done is just nonsense. And I've read their manifesto. I can't tell you how many times I've read the manifesto on their care issue. And whatever she said yesterday, it must be in part three. Nathan and I were talking earlier. There's three issues of the manifesto. Pre-manifesto, the manifesto, and this new one that they've updated. I've only got the one that they issue online that says this is a Tory party manifesto, and there is nowhere in that manifesto that it says there's going to be a green paper and discussion on a cap. Nowhere is it mentioned about having a cap. And the complication with that is the Tories cannot make up the deficit. You cannot say we're going to put £2 billion, maybe more than that, into our election fund. You know, this is what we're saying we're going to do. There's £2 billion more that we're going to spend, when you don't know where it's coming from. It's mythical. So the issue for Britain is about how we deal with elderly people and how you don't take their money away, you know, because most of these... My mum, you know, she's no entrepreneur, and she's done all her bit to say, when I go, the money's yours. Oh, I've got a brother, so there's two of us. And we go, to be honest, my mum's 85, I'm 65, and I just keep saying to her, do you think I really want your money, mother? You know, it's just not... I would have loved it when I was 35, but now it's like a bit too long ago. I'm glad you've been on the planet for 30 years longer. That's my view on it. So I think there's a lot of misconceptions. But for her, it's absolutely crucial. You know, and she has spent time with care. My father had to have care in. And when they come along, they frightened the life out of my mum. She thought she was going to lose her house while she was still living in it in order to care for my dad. And that's what's got to be removed, that fear of that. Oh, and we're going to remove that fear, because you don't have to pay for it until you're dead, and then we'll take the money out of your house. And you go, but that's the fear of my mum. My mum says we've spent all our lives putting the money together for you kids and now for you grandchildren and the great-grandchildren, and you're going to take it all away from me because I just happen to be ill.
Well, I mean, Theresa May has been saying she's defending the changes in social care policy by the Conservatives, and because her critics have been calling it a manifesto meltdown, saying there's been U-turns. She said nothing has changed in an interview with the BBC and said that rival parties have been trying to scare elderly people. Well, it seems to be scaring elderly people, Nathan.
Well, yeah, they are, and it's exactly what Alf said, and it is a question for the British government. The problem is, there's not enough money to do everything that the government wants to do, would like to do, and that people expect them to do. In the British society, the government is supposed to take care of you. If you've made money, you get to keep it, not spend it on keeping yourself alive. That's the government's job, not yours. Well, if that's what society believes in the way they want to do it, but... the government is at a point where it just doesn't have the money to do that, and they're groping around trying to find ways, the least erroneous way to raise the money, have the money to do what the government wants to do, what society wants, what individuals want for themselves. They want to pass the money on to their children and grandchildren and so on. That's fine, rather than use their money to keep themselves alive. They say that's not my problem. That's the government's problem. But the government doesn't have the money to do it.
Rosalind, your thoughts on this one?
Okay, well, I'm a bit confused because I thought for many years that's been the case, that when you go into an old age home, if you have a home, it's taken over as part of the payment. I thought that's been going on for many years.
No, not this. Listen, I mean, the government...
Okay, but Well, the way I see, I mean, I'm sure this is not original, handling the problem is we have to make sure that young people are being educated correctly so that they can find employment and so that they're in a position to work and pay taxes and contribute to society so that the pressure is not on the aging post-baby boomers.
Okay, we've got a caller on the line. Good morning, caller. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Kate Costa-Blanca.
Good morning, Kate.
Morning. A bit of a reply to Labour, or rather...
ALF, you mean?
ALF.
Rather than the whole of the party, but please, please feel free.
Right, well, it's just... I'm enjoying enormously reading John Crace's, who's a parliamentary sketch writer for The Guardian, comments on story about last night's interview by Andrew Neil of May, where general collapse all round. And someone's commented on the below-the-line comments. A few days ago, it was a Tory win 1-25 and Labour win 25-1. Now it's for Tory 1-14, as I write, and Labour 11-1. I recognise this almost certainly means a Tory win, but the rate of change is impressive, and if maintained, gives me hope. And then someone else just next comment. He's getting better by the midday, while May is sliding into the abyss, and that last night's interview was much worse than the famous Dan and Abbott. I think there are things to play for at the moment, because the Labour manifesto is sensible and clear and costed, and the Tories is all over the place.
Well, it's costed as far as us Joe public are concerned, but according to the Tories, it's got a $58 billion deficit in it.
Yeah, well, they would say that, wouldn't they?
Of course, which is why I can say that their care thing is different. And just to answer some of the thing, this is the Tory party manifesto, it's just a little bit.
Alf actually has the manifestos, absolutely, three manifestos on his desk,
and
but if only we had the webcam working, it would be a sight.
And I've read them all, and people could test me, but it does say, as the relative number of younger people is falling, so we haven't got that younger generation to pay, these costs increase, not just in total, but also for individuals. So if we are to give older people, and this is what Nathan's point is, if we are to give, not if you are to give, not if your family are to give, we, that means British society, if we are to give older people the dignity we owe them and younger people the opportunities they deserve, we face difficult decisions. That is not an issue for a party manifesto. We know there are difficult decisions. So what's your solution? Your solution is that you put up, instead of 23,500, you put it up to 100,000. That makes not a jot of difference to most people in the UK, especially the people with money. And they've used this you know, the equations. The average house price in the UK is 250,000. Well, it is if you're living in Northampton, maybe, or in Watford, but I can absolutely assure you, anywhere in the southeast of England, 250,000 is not the average house price ever, nowhere near it. And if you live up north, 250,000 is also not the average house price. So they pick these things at random and say, oh, that's what we're going to do. Why can't all of the parties just say we have a major, major critical problem and bite the bullet? Everybody knows that people are living longer. Old age pensions shouldn't be paid at 65. I'll say it. People shouldn't just retire at 60 or 62. I retired at 56, not officially, but I just packed up because I could afford to. But that's because I could afford to. I funded myself. If somebody wants to retire at 60 or 65, save up for your life and do it. But then don't let the government take it away because you happen to pass away. And I'll come back to it. My mum was absolutely petrified that she would have to sell the house she lived in to pay the care costs for my dad. That should never, ever happen. If she lived on her own and someone come along, like me and my brother, we go, oh, well, it doesn't matter to us, mum. We'll just sell the house. Because we could do that.
Well, we are going to be beaten by the bell to this point. Up next is the second hour of Viewpoint. International Spanish news up next. Back after this.